It is Friday, June 17th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today, after a spot of geek news, we're taking your calls with questions about technology and addressing the process of setting up your home DSL. And of course, it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on Geek Speak, after a spot of geek news, we'll be taking your calls and talking about the process of setting up your home DSL. What has your experience been? We're opening up the phone lines for you right after news, which is about 15 minutes from now. So take down the numbers now if you'd like to join us, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite to participation in about 15 minutes. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell, Miles Elam, Technical Trainer for Surf Control, and Drew Meyer, Storage Specialist at Adaptec. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
Now, Sean, well, first off, I showed up about an hour and a half ago to hang out here. You know, Johnny's here doing the whole NPR lead-in stuff, and it's fun to be here at the station. And Sean, you know, 20 minutes before the show, he comes in with the producer, Maggie Cleveland, and everybody's getting all prepped and all, everything's great. And Sean and I are talking about, well, how are we going to do the show? Just the two of us. We'll manage, you know. Sean's a bright guy, luckily, and I can talk. So.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's rare.
Must be true.
So,
you heard it on the radio.
And then, like, you know, I sit down in the air studio, start pulling up mics, and boom, Miles comes in. Boom, Drew comes in. So a full contingent. Thanks, guys, for getting here. I appreciate it.
No problem. Wouldn't miss it.
And DSL, I would. Normally I hate you guys, but, you know.
And I said as much last night. You're not coming? You must hate us.
I forgot we were going to do a DSL show and all this $15 deals that are going on TV right now. We got to talk about this.
Although we couldn't get anybody from representing DSL or cable on the show.
It's so perfect. Because, like, how many times have you tried to call up your service provider and can't get anybody on the phone? Go to our website. I can't go to the website. My service is down. So it's kind of humorous that I spent the last couple of days trying to get somebody on.
Yeah.
Cruise I was too busy with their stuff. Cruisers are too busy with their stuff. And you contacted who?
SBC Global. And to be fair, I mean, I think I sent the email out late yesterday afternoon.
I don't think they can get back to us.
They did. They got back, and they said that it's a little too late to get a spokesperson, but they definitely want to come on the show. So
I'm thinking, okay, what's going to happen? I'm all stressed out. And then yesterday, in the middle of the day, one of my colleagues, Christina Water, comes into the office and says, I just got off the phone with tech support, and they told me how to do the DSL, but can you draw me a diagram how to do this? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. So I start drawing it out and talk to her about it and stuff. And I get off and I get back to my computer, and Sean, you have a little AIM message to me, and it says, who's our DSL expert? And I just like, oh yeah, I guess we could probably handle this.
Yeah, we could do this.
We're technical enough. So we'll do DSL in just a minute. Let's do some geek news, the week of news. Sean, I'm going to start with you since you were here and ready so early.
Yeah, I have a lot.
I noticed that.
I know Miles has a lot too. A lot of interesting stuff. I think the one that really stands out, this is great. Google is mapping San Francisco in 3D.
About time. Can you play a game with it?
According to Silicon Valley Watcher, a specially designed truck is currently driving all over the city. It's equipped with lasers and digital cameras, and it hopes to be able to create a realistic three-dimensional model of the city.
Okay, who hasn't wanted to do this for a while? You know, to have a vehicle that scans out and drive around, that's just great.
How do they do the roof, the ceiling? I mean, the top.
Satellite?
I guess you get a ground eye view.
It's got to be probably a satellite picture, maybe. I don't know. They don't really say. Although they are having problems with cars and other obstructions, such as people.
Everybody. So, well, missed that one.
Better drive by next week.
People stop and watch the truck. What is that going on? The truck's like, please move out of the way.
So that should be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like.
Maybe these futuristic shows, you know, that have people have amazing interfaces where they can scan around the buildings and, you know, break into security systems. Maybe those things actually exist at some point. That'd be kind of fun.
So if this is successful, Google wants to expand this out to other major cities.
Of course. Great. So, thank you very much, Sean. Yeah. Mr. Elam.
Yes. At an archaeological dig at King Herod's place. Palace, I'm sorry.
Okay.
On Mount Lasada.
His crib.
King's crib. Yeah. Today on Geek's.
Yeah, I'm thinking like Herod's, like, you know, just talking about Vegas or something like that. No. The actual King Herod. On Mount Masada near the Dead Sea.
Thanks, sir.
They found a date palm seed. It's a tree that has since become extinct, but is talked about in the Quran and the Bible. And
in fact, it used to be widespread all throughout the Middle East, right? Now it's extinct.
Yeah. Well, they found this date seed, and they confirmed that it was 2,000 years old, and they planted it, and it has sprouted into a young tree.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's like time warp, right?
So now they'll be able to look at, for example, medicinal properties of the fruit of the Judean date tree.
Probably cures everything.
And it was long thought to be extinct.
It's a panacea.
Causes a plague, unfortunately.
Causes Middle East.
Causes frogs to fall out of the sky.
Right. What an odd behavior for a plant.
You can eat every part of it.
Well, thanks for that update on non-geeky stuff at all.
What are you talking about?
I think
about?
It's super geeky. What are you talking
archaeological
about?
Archaeological dig, finding this stuff and being able to date it and go like, yes, we know what this is. We're able to find it, be able to plant it, be able to
examine
it. We can see what it looks like.
This is what
2,000 years
from
now.
Examining our world.
Right. 2,000 years from now, we found an ancient notebook buried in the sand.
we're going to
water it.
And it turned on. Ran Windows, so...
But it crashed
and then
to a
it
blue
crashed
screen.
Blue screen right away.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't run Unix, because after 2035, Unix wouldn't work anyway.
What are you talking about? After 2035, they go like, oh, look, it hasn't changed at all.
That's getting geeky, huh? So I read about this tree, one more thing, that there's a 50-50 chance that the trees are so old that their species are male or female, that the species is split into two. It's a sexual tree. So that since we have sprouted one, if it's a female, it may have fruit, it may have been pollinated before, and it will germinate and reproduce. But if it's just a male, we're out of luck. So, what a tragedy. We'll see.
All right. What's your story, Drew?
Yeah, my story is that I'm still connecting, so I'm not really there yet. And my story is to have someone else go first here.
What a wonderful story. We'll go with Sean.
Yeah, okay. So, Intel has demonstrated a new technology called active management technology. And this is in their next Yona, it's codenamed Yona processor, dual-core mobile chip, that uses their 65-nanometer process, which makes the transistors even smaller. But this technology is really cool. It allows IT managers to remotely to use what's called out-of-band access to laptops and desktops to enable repairs. What that means is out-of-band bypasses the computer's operating system, and other loaded software, so the IT managers can access a notebook if it has been hit by a virus, even if that notebook is shut down and is unreachable.
Hmm.
So they demonstrated a notebook that it had been hit by a virus, Windows was affected, and it was pretty much locked up. Remotely, they were able to fix that notebook and get it to boot again.
So they wouldn't have. So this is cool, because normally what you have to do in that situation, because it's a laptop, you either have to get a bootable CD in there and spend a lot of time, or you've got to either yank the hard drive. That's commonly what we do at PUCS, is we'll pull the hard drive out and work on the hard drive remotely. So this idea is basically put in hardware.
It doesn't matter what OS you have.
The drive.
Right.
Great idea.
And once the machine, once you've figured out what the problem is, IT staff can automatically send out the necessary code to other vulnerable computers and force those computers to run the code so that they're fixed or they don't have the problem.
Hmm. So you don't even have to be there. Right?
So as long as it's hooked up to the network, you know, even if the computer's off, your IT can still get to it.
As long as your IT is actually your IT and not a virus maker. Sean, next story.
Hey, that's a good question, though. Does that offer the potential of spreading viruses or malicious attacks through this?
No, actually, I don't know.
Now suddenly my machine
is
sitting at home and it's got a wake on LAN card and pow, I'm infected and I didn't even turn it on.
Maybe. There might be some hardware hooks that Intel is putting into this with their chips. So.
Drew, thinking like a true geek.
Right. I would never do such a thing.
Now, it seems like Apple there's a lot of speculation about what they're going to be using for hardware. And this Yona chip, which is actually the first dual-core Pentium M, it seems like possibly they might be using this.
For their laptop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although analysts are saying performance gains with this chip would be more evolutionary rather than revolutionary. Mm. But there's a lot of things this chip does enable.
Well, Apple's going from the G5 chip to that, so it's probably going to be revolutionary
and
anyway.
To keep in that theme, Michael Dell was asked by David Kirkpatrick of Fortune magazine.
Michael Dell of Dell Computers. I thought you said Dale.
Dell.
Okay, go on.
So Michael Dell is the CEO. Actually, he's not anymore, but he's the founder of Dell Computers. Asked if he was interested in licensing Apple's OS, Mac OS, on the Intel platform, if he would do it. And he said if they made it available, yeah. Kind of interesting.
Very interesting. Miles, new stories.
I believe this has been covered in some other news organizations, but I feel it
deserves
it's worth having being said again. The Microsoft Network, MSN, the Chinese counterpart of it, MSN China, has banned the words democracy and freedom from parts of its website.
Wow. That is horrible.
This is an effort to...
What do you mean from part... You mean the network that Microsoft has in China is being filtered
by the
Chinese government?
The internet portal.
Okay.
All of China goes through one internet portal?
No. I'm talking about the MSN portal.
Oh, the MSN website. Site. So if you go to the MSN site and you're in China,
right,
you can't find anything about democracy.
Yeah. It doesn't... I mean, yeah. There's no... When you do a search on it...
That'll keep people down and pleased, yeah.
Does it replace the word democracy with something else?
No, but it does treat them like profanity. Uh-huh. Like you're not allowed to use these words. It's the same error message. And it's supposed to be an effort to avoid offending Beijing's political censors. And their excuse is that they must comply with local laws. But there is no Chinese law against the use of these words.
Interesting.
So...
All right. It's scary. You know, since you brought up China, I just want to mention some things about China that's kind of interesting. Spectrum magazine has a wonderful, in its June 2005 issue, current Spectrum, has a wonderful whole dedication about China, what's going on in China. And here's some facts that I thought was interesting. Bill Gates recently said, earlier this year, said that China graduates twice as many students with bachelor's degrees as the U.S., and they have six times as many majoring in engineering. This year, China will, this is end quote, this year China will graduate more than 300,000 engineers, which is staggering for increase of engineering, assuming especially that that's going to be increasing every year. So next year will be more like 400,000 and so on. So it's pretty impressive, the education. And the other thing that, you know, some general fun buzz things about China, more people use cell phones in China, more people have cell phones in China than the entire population of the United States. So there's more people using phones in China, cell phones in China, than there are Americans.
China has, what, four times as many people?
Yes, but still, you think of it more in a rural kind of way, and it's not. It's growing very fast. In any case, biggest thing going to hit us is going to be China economy. It's going to affect everything we do, and we'll be seeing a lot more stuff coming out of China.
Here's a little known secret.
Hmm.
Yeah, China already affects our economy, dude.
I'm just saying that it's the biggest thing coming. Any case, I'm going to go down to Drew. News story, finally.
Let's see. So this is exciting. I don't think you guys talked about this last week. The new extrasolar planet that was just discovered. Astronomers announced the discovery of a smallest planet so far found outside of our solar system. And the really cool thing about this is that it's a rocky world. It's stony, not a gas giant. They've found other planets that are all gaseous, like Jupiter and Saturn. But this is about 7.5 times as massive as Earth and about twice as wide. But it's the smallest extrasolar planet yet detected and the first of a new class of rocky terrestrial planets. It's like Earth's bigger cousin.
Yep. And it is quite of a landmark for planet detection, definitely.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it could have water on it, which means it's probably unlikely that it would have any other thing on it. But
considering it's the first we've found...
It's definitely a step in the right direction,
that, yeah.
Yeah,
that this is... The odds are better than any... Well, the scientists are saying the odds are better than we thought that there would be planets out there that could support something like
that. And the big thing, of course, is that these gas giants, they're you know, useless in the respect of us visiting them. They're giant, you know, gravity holes with no ability for us to get stuff off of them. So to see something that actually you could land on and participate in and leave is pretty interesting. Though it would take
us a little while. No plunder to be had. Well, forget
them. No economic incentive. Thank you, Drew, for the story on space. And Sean?
Yeah, the FCC was approached by TV manufacturers to try and push the date back for digital television signals. It used to be that they wanted everything to be turned digital by July 1st, 2006. Well, the federal FCC voted to move that time frame up by 4 months instead to March 1st. So all medium-sized televisions, those are screens from 25 to 36 inches, must be capable of receiving both digital and analog signals by March 1st. The commission's also proposing...
March 1st of 2006.
2006. And they're also proposing to move up the deadline for small TVs, 13 to 24 inches as well. So far, it's at the end of 2006. No, they're shooting for the end of 2006 instead of July 1st, 2007. So it should be interesting what's going to happen here.
Well, thank you very much. I think we're going to have to go on to talking about our show topic, but I'm going to go to one. I'm going to invite people to call in so we can queue people up. If you've had a bad experience or a good experience with DSL and want to talk about it, please give us a ring. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to be talking today about getting your network at home working and how that actually functions. And I'd love to hear some people recently getting DSL and, you know, did they get equipment? Did somebody come out and install it? Did they install it themselves? If you're experiencing DSL issues of that nature or handled it and everything worked great or didn't, please give us a ring and join the conversation. Tell us all about it. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Mr. Elam.
Yes. Okay. You know how the North Pole, you think of it in terms of the Earth on its axis, North Pole is right up there in the middle of that ice cap.
But stripes there's on also it. Reindeer. Yeah.
Exactly. There's also the magnetic pole, which is not exactly aligned.
3 degrees off or something?
Oh, well, it's a little more? Bit more than that. The roaming magnetic pole has used to be in Canada. It was there for the last 400 years, and then... left around 2001, it's been shifting. Mm-hmm. Now it's in international waters. It's now heading towards Siberia. And so it's kind of just like shifting along. It has actually left Canada now. It's in international waters and should be in Siberia by the middle of the century. It's actually picking up speed.
What about the southern magnetic pole? Does that mean that the reverse is happening down there?
Yes.
I don't have that information in front of me.
Well, yes, it is. So basically what you're saying is the magnetic North Pole, of course, it has to do with the north and south of the planet.
Yeah, north and south the magnetic spinning field. Iron core is producing generating a magnetic field. And
theoretically. Mm-hmm. So the idea being is that the core, since it's moving around, its magnetic field can move around. And it's never been aligned. I don't know if everybody remembers this. Sean, I'm sure you remember being an Eagle Scout and everything, that the compass pointing north was not actually north. It was close to north.
Yeah.
So this is basically means if you follow the compass, you're going to end up in international waters in the next, 10,000 years.
But it takes so many years for that to move.
It doesn't really matter that much, definitely.
Yeah, you can plan a trip and still get there when you plan to get it.
The maps that we use with magnetic north are still good.
Yeah.
It could take thousands of years for those maps to go bad.
Right. We were younger children, though. It's like the magnetic north pole was in the part of Canada that basically was north of us right now.
Right.
So it wasn't a big deal. Now it's.
But now you're in Maine and you're in the north pole. And where's the point?
You're in Nova Scotia.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We're we got a call from someone that says, okay, wait, you guys talked about something freaky. Is in 2005 Unix really dead? What's going on? So, Miles, will you address that little thing we just talked about during the news segment?
I'm sorry, in 2005 is Unix?
2035.
There's a date issue here.
Because of the clock issue.
You know what? I'll let Drew answer it. He was paying attention.
No. I'm not as up on it. I just know that there's a clock just like Y2K.
Yes, it's 2038, I think, actually. But unlike most... Or unlike, say, Windows, which uses a date based upon, instead of saying, like, a date being a four-digit date, the problem we had with the year 2000 bug, where people were using two-digit dates instead of four-digit dates.
Yeah, because bits were so, so valuable. Both valuable back then, yeah.
Unix-based systems were never vulnerable to the Y2K bug because they didn't work off of that date model. They worked off of a 32-bit integer.
Milliseconds since the first Unix machine got fired up, I think.
Well, no, it's milliseconds since the epoch, which is January 1st, 1970.
See, why is it 1970?
I think that was just a number that they...
Yeah, okay. I always kind of assumed the first computer got turned on. It's like, okay, let's just start this at the start date.
The first computer was much earlier than that, yeah.
So epoch. So Unix starts up and it says, the first day of 1970, let's start a counter, and everything will be based off of that counter. And that counter is held in a 32-bit integer.
Right. And by the way, I don't think it is milliseconds. I think it's only seconds.
Okay.
But a 32-bit integer, unsigned integer, is going to give you slightly more than 4 billion possibilities. So 4 billion seconds after 1970...
is 2038.
Yes. But, I forgot the exact
but we're switching slowly to 64-bit operating systems, so theoretically it'll get doubled again.
Assuming that you actually change the software to use a 64-bit value for the date.
And that's the joke and the thing we talk about with Unix, that during 2000, during 1999, everybody was, every computer software company was going through this major software overhaul, isolating every single thing they could, because it was during the boom, and you got a lot of money flowing, and every company was like, I'm not giving you money unless you're Y2K compatible, because I don't want to lose everything. So everyone spent all this time and effort, and you're sitting here working on Unix machines, and you're testing these things that can't be bad. I mean, you know how it works, but you have to go through all this test procedure. I did a lot of that. And so it was always joking, like, well, we got to remember what we're doing, because in 38 years, we'll have to do this again. And so the older engineers that really knew Unix really well, they're like, I don't have to worry about that. And I'm like, oh, I might have to. Darn it.
Wikipedia tells us that the Unix time number is zero at the Unix epoch and increases by exactly 86,400 counts per day since the epoch. So every day, the time, the clock rolls over 86,400
That
Unix
sounds like the number
seconds.
Of seconds.
Unix seconds, yeah.
Ooh, Unix
are,
seconds.
Well, because the Gregorian, you know, the world is not exactly orderly according to the Unix programmer's vision. So there are some days that have 86,401. Sometimes there are 86,399. But in general, you know, the rule of thumb.
Right, it doesn't take account for leap seconds. Right.
So somehow it all ends up. But January 1st, 1970. And then, of course, in 1972, they changed Greenwich Mean Time, so it is off already.
Now, one way you can think of this is not that Unix is not that accurate. You can actually think of it as Unix is more accurate than the Earth is.
Okay. Let's get...
You could, yeah. But no one would be there when you set a meeting with them.
And it's got no compass. Okay, so let's get on to our topic of the day, which is setting up your home DSL. We got a call a few weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, from, I believe, Edith, who said, I bought DSL. I have the stuff. I don't have it set up because it... How do I do it? And I realized that it's very possible at this point, because of the way DSL functions, that you can get an account and they ship you a box and then you have your stuff and you're paying for it, but you're not hooked up. So I thought, well, we can kind of talk about how you hook up your home network and the different steps. So let's start off by DSL. DSL is a, Miles, what is it?
A digital subscriber line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
uses POTS.
Yeah. Uses what?
The POTS, the plain old telephone system.
Right.
And that's a real acronym. I'm not making that up.
There are a few variants.
The ADSL and SDSL.
Which doesn't matter that much, but basically the distance from the central hub that you can get different types of coverage. But
right, but those have to do with the speeds going
the
over.
DSL, the information being sent is in the audible range, so trying to use as much bandwidth, if you will, of your phone line itself. So if you plug a phone directly into a line that actually has DSL on top of it, you'll hear stuff, and it's kind of disturbing, and it'll interfere with your phone call. So the first step in setting up your home is to filter your phones and remove the DSL. So in your box, you're going to get all these little filters, and it looks basically like a thing that plugs into a phone line, and a phone line can plug into it. And it normally has a picture on one side of a phone and a picture on the other side with a line, and it's not that hard to do. But basically, you want to put that on every phone in your house, but not on the computer, because then the computer won't have DSL. But it's not really a computer. So that's the first step. Filters go on the phone lines. Next step, Miles, Drew, Sean?
Well, you have to have something that can speak the DSL language, quote-unquote, right, so that the computer can talk to the phone line and then carry the signals over the phone line. You have to modulate and demodulate the signal, and that's sort of a geeky way to say modem, okay? You with me so far, boys?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you have to have a DSL modem. Yeah, right. You have to have a DSL modem. So you plug the DSL modem into the phone line on one side and your computer on the other side, essentially.
And maybe not your computer on the other side.
Maybe a router, but...
Right. So one line's going to say phone, and one's going to say Ethernet or WAN or LAN. It's going to have a different...
Yeah.
Now, modems can be connected with the network cable or with USB, right?
Right, right. So think of this box as translating between the phone system and your network, whatever
right.
connection to the network that you want to make.
Right.
And that's a key part of all this.
Right. Now, Ooh, you know what? We got a call, so let's take this. We'll take a break right there on that thought process, and we'll take a call from, let's see, where is it calling? From Ken from Royal Oaks. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Ken. What's your question?
Oh, hi. Well, you know, just before we get launched on the whole, you know, thing of setting it up, there are people like us down in Hidden Valley Road in Royal Oaks, and, you know, we can't get any DSL, and,
right.
and SBC has promised us. And I know there's lots of people like me in little valleys, a little... I fit right between the Watsonville coverage between, you know, to the local office distance and the Prunedale and stuff. And you know, is there any hope for us? Because I talked to SBC for 5 years, and they have Project Pronto that says it's going to bring DSL in, and they never do. And do you guys know, do all of you, you know, smart guys know of any way? I know sometimes local communities can band together and get really angry and demand that, you know, SBC bring in DSL. But do you guys know anything about that?
I live up in Lompico, and up there there's no DSL as well because the carrier's just too far away. And I called and complained and asked to ISPs and stuff. And the best thing to do, I think, is to talk to the local ISP companies because they're the ones that care about the community more that they're in. So like in Santa Cruz area, northern Santa Cruz County, Cruz IO is kind of one of the bigger groups. They actually, PacBell actually, or the SBC actually installs the DSL line, but you go through Cruz IO. They're able to understand a little bit more what's going on, but it is a very difficult situation, and there's not a clean way to band together. Do you have like a local water company or something that you have a group already affiliated?
Yeah, there is a small little water company here.
How many houses does it serve?
Oh, it's only, you know, 20 or something.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is they're not going to care about 20
consumers.
It's
an economic decision for the ISP.
So
and
the next
SEC.
Question, do you have cable up there?
No, that's the trouble. There's
no
nothing.
Cable.
In fact, I talked to Redshift, and there are two other wireless companies operating around the region. And
Good. They
just won't bring in a transmitter on a local hill here that can get it. I can't quite, you know, Redshift has a transmitter in Castroville, and there's just nobody who will come in here and set up a transmitter, you know, locally enough for us to get any kind of wireless.
There's basically, unfortunately, nothing we can do. There could be, you know, a county or a city ordinance that would enforce a company that if they want to have, like, maybe a tax deal or something to put network into remote areas.
Yeah.
I would think that the political process would be the best for you to engage in because the company's just not going to see the profit in it. I had the same kind of thing going on. I wanted, you know, before the cable company came in and said high-speed access, which I finally was able to get in Lompico, this was a continual frustration with me, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel your pain. I suggest you use some great internet cafes in Santa Cruz to do your serious surfing.
I go to Starbucks.
You go to Starbucks. Yeah, yeah. So Starbucks has a monthly fee. There are some great local shops that have
mobile.
No access, no cost at all. They want you to use it for free. So because they want you to have some coffee. So three places I'll recommend because I use them. The Attic down on Pacific is across from the metro station on Pacific. It's a restaurant and tea bar, if you will. It's a really big space. They've got great wireless. Another one that I like is Cafe Bene. And Cafe Bene is down, I'm blanking on the name of the street. Across from Atlantis Fantasy
World.
It's
from Union, isn't it?
I'm not sure. Union. Mm-hmm. It's next to the Union. So it's right down there. Great little place. Really wonderful coffee.
The
one over on the, what's that?
Coffeetopia on the west side. Yeah.
Coffeetopia, yeah.
And the place I like close to the harbor and close to the New Seabright area is Ignis Group's Lava Rock Cafe. Great location.
Yeah.
You can plug in there, too. They've got a lot of amenities, and they've got some computers. So if you're, you know, I recommend that because at least you're not paying.
Oh, and there's one in Scotts Valley called Coffee Cat.
Oh, yeah, Coffee Cat in Scotts Valley.
It's on Mount Hermon Road.
Are there monthly charges that you still have to spend? I mean, you still have to have an account with T-Mobile or something.
No. That's the key that we're recommending. The large chains, like you mentioned, Starbucks, are typically, well, they'll charge you. They'll bring
you have
in,
to have a T-Mobile account.
T-Mobile or
hourly, or it's a 24-hour rate.
No, but the smaller guys have a deal where they have the connection already. They're paying for it, and they bring you in for free as long as you buy, you know, some services from them or some products from them.
And it's really quite cheap. It's really, you know, you just got to think about there's a small coffee shop. They have to have a, you know, certain amount of business coming in. If you're going to sit there all day and have one cup of coffee, it's kind of mean. But if you have a cup of coffee or you have something to eat, you're paying them fairly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And support the local industry.
Certainly. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We have an email from Robert in Aromas. Here's something we hear a lot, but, you know, you can't get service, but what do you do when your next-door neighbor has DSL service and you're told you can't have it?
So you pirate from your neighbor.
That's right. you buy your neighbor a wireless access point, and you buy one too. And
you make a little mesh network, and all your neighbors go off of him.
The way this used to be, when Chris Dunphy, the geek Chris Dunphy, used to live in Boulder Creek, and what he did is he called up the company and said, look, I will pay for everything. I will pay for your installation. I will pay for everything as long as you put it in. And he did have to pay a bit more because there was this risk that it wouldn't work. But it did work. This is a standard thing, I think, in the mountain areas of the coast, if you will, where the company's not sure if it's going to work, so they're not going to take any risk. Same thing happened when cable first came on. My next-door neighbor got it, and I couldn't. And it was so frustrating.
And the reason there is the distance from the central office.
Yeah.
Typically, you're right. Your house is too many feet from the central, and actually I mean feet, distance of run from the central office where the DSL provider is pushing the cable signal out. And your neighbor is just close enough that he can get it reliably, and you can get it, and the company's not comfortable providing reliability.
So what you can do, that's a difficult one. I think what you do is you tell them that you want to install DSL, and you give them the address of your neighbors, and then you hang out there until they show up, and you say, actually, I'm right here. And you hijack them.
That just might work.
But try to get a human on the phone, of course. Okay, I'm late for break, so... This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. When are you going to read that? Drew, go for it.
Let's see. Save Our Shores 2005 Stewardship Series presents Get On Board, A Citizen's Role in Water Supply, Concerns and Alternatives, Balancing Water Supply and Demand with Conservation Strategies. This is Wednesday, June 22nd, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Moss Landing Chamber of Commerce Building, 8071 Moss Landing Road, off Highway 1. Information is available at 462-5660.
Drew, you've got a beautiful voice. If you have questions or comments for us, Geek, even Drew, the beautiful voice man, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We are almost full on our phone lines. We've got one more, and we're talking about DSL and home situations. Stick with us, please.
This week in This American Life, Chaim had never heard pop music or seen MTV. He barely spoke English, was heading for an arranged marriage at 20, a yeshiva student in Brooklyn, when he met Billy, the star of an underground glam rock band. Billy put him into a costume and into a band.
It was like Superman style, you know. He would show up Hasidic, go into the bathroom, and just transform.
Living like you're in the 19th century, leaping into the 21st, this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You know, that's a wonderful segment. I heard that segment before, and it's just great. Okay, this program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, and MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are Sean, Miles, and Drew. We're talking and taking your calls about DSL and high-speed internet connection at home. We're going to go now to... Let's see, Michael in Soquel, welcome to GeekSpeak. Michael has hung up on us. How sad. Let's try him again. Michael, you there? Okay.
Hello.
Hello, yes. Who is this?
This is Peter.
Peter, hi. From Salinas. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
From Salinas, but in Chular.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, I'm on the road, but I pulled over so I can speak safely.
Thank you very much.
I have a G4 with it running on a DSL line, and I have a wireless router and a PC running on the other side of the house, and I'm getting really weird behavior in terms of that connection on the PC. It comes and it goes, the connection to the internet, and strangely and inexplicably, seemingly, when my wife brings her laptop home from work. She can always get into the wireless connection, and oftentimes for me to be able to get a wireless connection on the PC in the back of the house, she merely needs to log into her computer and get a connection, and then I can get a connection. Does that make any sense to you at all?
Fascinating. She's got a Mac?
No, she's got a PC also.
Just a PC laptop.
Yeah.
This is actually sounding similar to something that's happened in my house.
Okay, and I'm good, because sure I'm totally stumped.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why it happens. I think it's a bug in the wireless routers where someone tries to connect with 802.11b and another one tries to connect with 802.11g. Even though they're supposed to be compatible, for some reason sometimes it'll go like, oh, there's a G one, and the B ones can't connect, but then they're disconnected.
But what you're saying is your PC in the back works fine, or doesn't work until she comes in and connects in the middle.
Yeah, quite often, I can't get a connection. It's strange. I'll be able to get a connection for, 10 days in a row, no problem. Uh-huh. Then all of a sudden, I won't be able to get a connection. I don't know why. I can't figure out why.
So I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
Make sure that the firmware on your wireless router is up to date.
What the heck does that mean?
I don't know.
It makes a little sense, I guess.
This is the code that actually runs the wireless router.
Okay.
You need to go to whoever the manufacturer is. Look up that device, Netgear, yeah. Go to their support section and look for a BIOS or firmware update and follow their directions.
But be careful because you want to...
You could lose your settings, so write those down first.
But you want to be sure that they change the chipsets in the models and the firmware is specific to the chipsets. So they'll have very specific instructions on which model, which firmware set is applied to.
Don't ignore the A and B kind of thing at the very end. Those are important.
Go out there to your closet, get your router, write down exactly what the model is.
Look on the bottom of the router.
Right, and it'll show exactly. And they'll have a picture of the label on the site.
Normally these guys are going to, you know, they're going to plug into the local network, the Ethernet network, and then they're going to have wireless service. You want to be plugged in, actually, to that network connection, because if you upgrade the BIOS to the wireless, it might not function correctly.
Right.
Just all their instructions very clearly for the letter. And that is definitely the first step to do on these kind of things. The second thing is make sure your wife's laptop is around. You can use it all the time.
Yeah, right.
Thank you very much for the call.
Good luck.
Bye. Yeah, they update a lot of settings in those routers all the time.
And security stuff, too.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to keep that firmware current.
Okay, we are, unfortunately, the phones from where our producer is to where I am are different. So I don't know who I'm saying hi to. So is this Susan or Michael or Jim?
This is Susan.
Susan, welcome to GeekSpeak. So Susan from, Aptos. Hi. What's your question?
Well, my question is kind of like the previous callers, except reverse. We have a little, first of all, we've had DSL for a year, and we're right on the edge of where they were willing to bring service. And so I'm wondering whether there's some signal issues, but we have a little two-wire network that's hardwired into my son's PC, but I have my Apple iMac airport card that it just sometimes finds the network and sometimes doesn't.
The two-wire is a pretty slick little box. It includes... I don't know exactly which version you have, but the versions, newer ones and older ones maybe have a USB connector as well as built-in wireless on some of them and a regular Ethernet connection. So tell me, are you using the Ethernet connection to connect, or are you using the wireless connection with your AirPort? Sounds like the wireless.
It's the wireless to my Apple, yeah.
And because of the distance from the two-wire gateway?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. How close is it?
30, 40 feet.
Okay. I want you to do a favor for me. When you do connect with your OS X Mac, do a Google search on an application called Mac MAC Stumbler. The word Stumbler. One word, Mac Stumbler. Get that, because it's an application that when your wireless is connected, it will tell you the signal strengths. Uh-huh. And you can kind of map your house and find the really good signal strengths.
Oh, good idea.
The next thing is you'll notice, you can test this yourself. If you've got like a microwave in between you and your wireless point or some wireless phones, it'll interrupt a connection.
Wrought iron railing, reinforced wall.
Okay, so it's right on the other side of a wall from a microwave, but not in between.
Those microwaves don't care about that wall.
Yeah. Only when they're on, though.
Yeah.
The microwave only interferes when it's on, but a reinforced wall can cause a lot of issues.
So what you can do is you can take Mac Stumbler, you can put your laptop in one place and start it up, and it'll give you signal strength. And then you can walk around the house and see how low it goes and how high it goes. It's really fun.
Except it's a desktop.
It's a desktop. Well, then not as much walking. So it's a desktop with a wireless access point, or is there a wireless...
Yeah, when we got it, I just got the airport card, so I could put it wherever I wanted.
Okay, well, Mac Stumbler will still work. But you can move around your transmitting your base station's location, and that will work for you as much as you can. As you move that, have your son move that thing around, kind of in the room, hanging on the wall, bring it a little higher and stuff. And then on your Mac, you can say, okay, that's good, that's bad, that's good. Since you're stationary,
so there is a signal strength issue coming out of the out of the 2R.
Almost
there might be, but it sounds very the inconsistencies like that are typically the invisible like radio waves.
Yeah.
Okay,
problems.
And so it's nothing wrong with the airport card.
No. If you're getting connectivity, then...
I would suspect the transmitter before I would think of the card.
Okay, and then I just wanted to say that I did, get all the hardware and software from SBC and set all this up all by myself a year ago.
And how'd it go for you?
SBC was great. I mean, they really walked me through every step, and they you didn't have to hang out on hold forever. It was really amazing.
That's good.
Yeah, it was. And but then just randomly about a week ago, the DSL signal failed. And they came out, and they couldn't explain why. They said, we're getting it to the house. And they walked around and tested all of the jacks and said, there's some interference coming from somewhere. And then they left, and then it started working again.
You know, I've had problems with phone companies where the test themselves, when they actually test things... When they do, like, the test of the ping or whatever of the network, all of a sudden it starts working again.
Yeah.
So it's like I used to have to do this with ISDN, where I'd have to call the company and say, yeah, it's not working, and they do a test, and I go, thanks, and I hang up the phone. And they'd be like, oh, no, it works fine. I'm like,
yeah,
well, now
exactly. That happened to me. When I moved from Berkeley to Brookdale, I was told, hey, your line works great. I don't see why they didn't understand why I couldn't see it. This is SBC Global. I had taken my modem with me because I didn't want to buy a new one. And I was trying to use that modem. And the settings over here are different than they are in Berkeley. So the guy had to come to the house, and he hooked up his little device and checked out my settings. And this is something I cannot fix. This is hard-coded settings. And he said, oh, yeah, you would never access the Internet with this modem. And he changed a few numbers. You know, there you go. And I was good. So.
But once it's working, I think that the two steps are, first you unplug your modem if it stops working. Unplug your modem for a while, and then plug it back in. And, you know, 50 seconds, whatever. Yeah. And then if it doesn't work, call them up and say, please test it. And they'll first say, well, can you please unplug your modem and stuff? And you go, yeah, okay, here you go.
Well, they have to remove the filter from the line that the modem goes into.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's very important.
The filters are for the other phones.
Yeah, but so it's not plugged in through a filter anymore.
We just, I believe, lost Jim from San Lorenzo, who I really want to speak with. Hopefully, Jim, you'll call back. We are working on the phone line. But if you'd like to call in, and first off, let me thank you very much for being on. Thank you. We are going to take Jim right now. We're taking your calls with questions and comments about experiences with DSL and setting up your networks. If you have questions about how to do it, or you have a story about how it succeeded, or you have like a phone number that's the right person to call at one of these companies, please give us a ring. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You're listening to Geek Speak. The geeks in the air room are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Drew Meyer, and I'm Lyle Troxell. We're taking a call now from Jim in San Lorenzo Valley. Jim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, I'm on a cell phone. Can you hear me?
Yes, no problem.
Okay. Using public hotspots, wireless, isn't it pretty important to use web tunneling, because couldn't somebody surreptitiously
absolutely
monitor your transmission?
Absolutely. It's a very
depends
good
what
point.
You're doing, you know. If you're doing work from your corporate location, you probably want to use your VPN. But if you're just surfing the web,
It comes down to how secure you want to be, but there's definitely issues about that, and I can address that. Do you have any other questions?
Is the web tunnel pretty much 100% foolproof, and are some better than others? Or
when you say web tunnel, I'm not sure if that's a product that somebody makes. But
I'm using Prime Media.
Prime Media, okay. I think that any company you're going to go ahead and get a service like that to protect your while you're on the wireless, they're going to be fine. They're going to make sure that it's okay. So if you want to pay for something like that, that's no problem. You can probably do pretty good at understanding the security model and making sure you use the right protocols. If you do that, you're going to be really safe. It's a little hard to understand. Miles, you seem to have an issue.
Yeah, that actually reminds me, talking about wireless access points at public locations, make sure that your computer has a software firewall. Make sure you have antivirus and anti-spyware installed. That's something we forgot to mention.
Or a Mac.
Very important, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even with a Mac, you want to make sure that you have firewall settings.
And if you have any shares at all that are not password protected, you need to get rid of them or add passwords, because anyone can access those on a wireless, public wireless network.
So, Jim, the issue about the tunneling thing is this. When the computers talk to each other, when the computer talks to the wireless access point, that traffic is in the clear. There are some encryption methods. Normally, these open access points have nothing of the sort. And even if they do, the setup right now, the kind of standard, which is WEP, is not very secure. If someone spends some time looking at the traffic, which you can do in about 2 hours like that with a fast computer, you can hack and figure out exactly what's going on. So in any case, if you're at a coffee shop, you have to basically understand that your communication from your computer, your laptop, to the wireless access point is totally readable by anybody that wants to read it. Okay. Next step is, what are you sending across back and forth, and how can you protect that data? So, for example, one thing that people do all the time is check their email. Most email service providers, they set up their first email accounts or anything through a wired network, which is relatively safe. And the basic idea is you have a POP account, and a POP account, its standard way of interfacing is in the clear. So you have your username and your password that you connect to your email account with. What you have to do is you have to find out if your carrier, your ISP, provides secure POP connections. And basically, it's a few settings you have to do in your mail client, and if your ISP supports it, then you know that your mail transferring is protected. And that's for receiving would be POP or IMAP, and you want to make that secure. And for sending, it would be SMTP, and you want to make that secure. Now, this is crucial on the receiving side, because someone can get your password and username, and they can check your email anytime they want. It's important on the sending side in as much as people can see what you're sending. Now, the other traffic that people do a lot of is like web browsing and things like that. Any kind of site that has to do with money, like a bank or some kind of purchasing online, they're going to use secure connections, and the browser is going to say HTTPS up in the upper left, and there'll be some kind of lock symbol on the browser. Once you're in that environment, no one can see that data either. So those are the tricks that I do, for example, to be safe. I make sure that my email client is using secure protocols. You can call your ISP or go to the ISP's website to figure out how to do that. And you're going to make sure that whenever you are accessing a site and you don't want other people to be able to access it like you and see the data, you want to make sure that the site supports secure socket layers or HTTPS and has the lock symbol on there. That's the best I can offer right now over the air. Thank you very much for the call.
Hey, Lyle.
Yes.
For people who can't get DSL,
yeah.
Chris Dumphy, one of the geeks, mm-hmm. When he lived up in Boulder Creek and he couldn't, he contacted a company called rawbandwidth.com, Raw Bandwidth Communications. They can get you DSL access. They cover from Gilroy to Santa Cruz, from Santa Rosa to Napa, all along the Oregon border, pretty much a big chunk of Northern California. So if you're having problems, if you think you can get DSL, if your neighbor has it, contact Raw Bandwidth Communications. They were able to talk SBC into getting Chris DSL.
And he was way up in Boulder Creek.
That's cool.
Wonderful.
Nice, Chris.
Long
the other thing is cable, too. We haven't talked about that at all because this is really a DSL show. But
yeah.
Don't forget, if you have cable TV, you can also get internet. And
well,
sometimes
that's not always true.
All right.
Yeah.
Most of the time, some of the time. Oh, and DSLReports.com. There's a huge plug for that site. Go there.
DSLReports.com.
Put in your zip code or your phone number, and it'll give you a lot of information, ratings, competitive information on
And they
on
might
pricing.
Actually give you, yeah, they'll give you better information possibly than your carrier will. Okay.
Yeah.
Long-time listener, caller, and a long-time DSL person from Monterey. Garland, welcome to GeekSpeak. Welcome back to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Good, good. What's your comment?
Well, you put out a call a while earlier from people who have DSL, and you want
yes.
to know a little bit about experiences. Before DSL was even in Monterey available at all, and they were just talking about it, I signed up on their website for an email to let people know when it's coming. And apparently they were having some big conference or something here where all the head honchos were coming into town at the conference center here, and they were going to do a big thing. So there all of a sudden was this big push out of nowhere to get DSL in Monterey in time for this big, huge conference. So I got an email saying, okay, we're doing it, so you're one of the first, so do you want to get it? And I immediately ordered it and got it. And, you know, they came and they installed it. It took hours for them to install it originally. Now, this is back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, something
right.
like that. So, you know, it took them forever. You know, the box itself was really big that they had to put on my phone, on my wall, or by my phone jack, et cetera. It took 5-6 hours to get it going. Finally, the first year or so, I mean, the service was pretty horrible. I mean, and they had, I think, 10 guys, 8 guys to cover everywhere from here to San Jose or something. I mean, it was a humongous area, so it was ridiculous getting the service. But over the last couple of years, it actually has gotten better and easier. And their service now, you call up their support line, and I'm pretty sure it's outsourced to India or something. But the people on the line, they're pretty good, and they run you through. And they've been able to, the few times it's been gone down in the last year or two, they've been able to help me get it up pretty quickly, and I haven't had to have a guy come out. Eventually, I did have to have the box changed. They updated it and put a tinier box
mm-hmm.
on my wall. So, and I've been with that for a while, but I've had the same modem, a Westel, for pretty much the whole time, and it works pretty good. And now I have a Netgear, so I have wireless on it as
Great.
Well.
So, Garland, thank you for the update on how it worked for you in the beginning and how it's progressed.
Thanks. And one quick question I did have is I'm trying to figure out how to do my printer, put my printer into my network. I have a PowerBook, and I have a couple of desktops.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know is there any way I can use my printer, like print from my laptop,
yeah.
Without having to come in and plug it in all the time?
Well, there
yeah,
are.
There are. There are little boxes you can get from Netgear, Linksys. They all sell them. They're mm-hmm. that will hook up to your printer and then hook up to your network.
There's also Bluetooth adapters. So
yeah.
if you can get a Bluetooth connection for your laptop and then you have a Bluetooth to parallel connector you put on your printer, and you'll be able to anywhere between within like 50 feet.
Yeah, but that's like your
all the machines.
Yeah, the Garland
share it either.
Garland, what you want to look for is the print server, little module called the print server kind of thing. I think that's what it's called. And they basically plug into your network jack on one side, a power line, and into your computer. And there's USB.
They're usually
type,
USB. Parallel type. There's parallel and USB.
All right, we're going to.
And then everybody can share the printer.
Thank you very much.
And they're pretty simple. Cool. Yeah. Thank you very much.
They're inexpensive too.
Tescadero, Sam, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello, I have a question, and I suppose it's illegal, but can you tell me if it's possible? I have a cable TV service I pay for every month. Is the internet line running on that, and could I buy my own modem box and pull the internet off my cable TV line?
No.
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 Nice try, though.
So it's not possible.
Well, conceptually, you're on the right track. I mean, you provide all the pieces, but the cable company at the head end has to know, in order to push the signal out to you, has to know that you're there and know that you're. They have to take your money and give you an IP address, et cetera. So
the way to be
ready
to.
That IP address, and they have to actually turn it on. The signal isn't there automatically.
That's right. It's like this imaginary giant bank of switches, and your house is one switch, and they flip the switch, and suddenly you have signal.
It's a little more complicated than that. Of course.
well,
you could, if you wanted to be illegal and breaking the law and doing bad things, you could actually do it by knowing what your next door neighbors, who is paying for the service, what their MAC address is, and then you would fake that MAC address. But I wouldn't recommend it.
No, it seems to me that there'd be a way they could end up tracing and busting you.
And there's some pretty serious. When the cable companies dealt for a long time with theft because it's not that hard to climb up your pole and connect the cable.
Right.
And before it was the digital services, when the analog service, and they were still there, all it was plugging it in and you could buy a little cable
box.
Right,
they couldn't track an analog signal.
Right, yeah. So in a lot of ways, they have got some really great laws in place that will punish people.
Actually, they could track an analog because the termination on the other end, they can see when the voltage would drop.
But they can do it from the pole. That's about when they can do it.
But it's not the same.
In any case, no, you got to buy the service for them. And I highly recommend it.
This question's been on my mind for at least 3 months, and I'm glad you guys are here on Friday to help answer things like that.
It was a pleasure, Sam.
But if you've got a wireless card or something for your notebook or your desktop, you might be able to hijack internet that way.
Just war drive your neighborhood and find someone who's in range with a open network.
That's a definite way to do it. We unfortunately are not able to take any more calls today. I really appreciate everybody calling in. Let's wrap up. I know that we didn't answer all the questions possible about DSL and home use. I recommend getting DSL service through a local ISP because I like local ISPs. I happen to know some of them. For example, Cruise.io sponsors us, and they also started GeekSpeak years ago. But in general, the idea is that the people in the more local community will know, you know, when you say, I live way up in here, they'll know where that is. The large companies might not. Now, granted, I'm not sure which way is the easiest, but that's kind of my take on it. We didn't really cover much of the cable side, but cable and DSL, in my feeling, is pretty much exactly the same. Get the one that's cheaper and get the one that you can get. Any other thoughts on that?
There's a lot of interest. Maybe we ought to keep an eye on geekspeak.org, and we'll see if we can't do another show like this, maybe with SBC online.
I think we definitely will. The Geeks this morning, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Drew Meyer. And I'm trying to find my closing thing. Oh, this program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. And a quick plug for Santa Cruz Electronics is kind of nice. Inside their store, right on the wall, is a whole bunch of cards for people that do like home services for computer repair and help. Now, Santa Cruz Electronics actually does do computer repair, but if you wanted someone to come to your house, you can go in there and take a look at a business card. And if you're someone that does that kind of work, throw your business card up there. It's a great kind of connection. To you geeks, thanks for being here. Those that called in, thank you very much. The producer of the show every week is Maggie Cleveland. She answers the phones. And thank you all for participation. For those that called in, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, you know, and who really wants to listen to that? Next week, Sean, what do we got? Next week's show.
ATI. This should be a really interesting show. They're actually going to come on and talk about TV, video technologies, latest multimedia product that they're announcing.
Which
we can't give
the
name, but if you're interested in TV, gaming, video editing, and the latest stuff from ATI, who compete with NVIDIA, come that. Listen to the show. It's going to be really interesting.
And we're getting a product come in, so we'll be able to talk about how it worked out for us and how it will work for you. So I'm kind of excited about that show. ATI is a major player. It's fun to have them on. And we've got shows lined up coming every week. The Geeks are here. Coming up next, though, is Open Road with Dean Monroe. And at 1 p.m., Two Steps to the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KDBH San Ardo. We're on the web, of course, at kusp.org. For KUSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week. Stay tuned for music, but first, some NPR news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. President Bush is promoting Medicare's new prescription drug benefit. He traveled to a community center near St. Paul, Minnesota.